Blog Talk Radio.
This is Chief for Yourself. Now, here's Gio.
Hi, and welcome to Chief for Yourself. Great to have you with us, wherever you happen to be in the world at this moment. Busyness has become, well, a status symbol in society. Overworking and undersleeping are a couple of the byproducts of this, unfortunately. But what does all the busyness accomplish? Our guest today has written a book that shows you how to reclaim your time and get off the busyness hamster wheel, if you will. Yvonne Talley is the author of Breaking Up with Busy, Real Life Solutions for Overscheduled Women. Yvonne, your book was inspired, I know, by a health scare you had at one point in your life, and it really jumped out at me because I had a similar scare in my early 20s, and it really does feel life-threatening. Take us through that time in your life, what you learned, and how you responded during what was the lead-up to writing the book.
Oh, yes. Thank you, John. It's great to be with you today. I was so busy teaching others how to live a vibrant and healthy lifestyle. You know, I was growing a business, raising my daughter, and I even missed my own signs of being busy and overscheduled. It was my fast-paced, sleepless nights, cram schedules that landed me in the hospital in the emergency room, and I thought I was having a heart attack, and in fact I was having a panic attack brought on by stress. And if anyone has ever experienced that, they know it feels as though this is it. This is the end of the road. Mm-hmm. And it scared me enough that I made a huge lifestyle shift and adopted a much more mindful approach to my life on a daily basis. So it was really a gift in disguise for me. And it's experienced by a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, it's interesting. You mentioned mindfulness. Did you become mindful? Is that a result of going through that panic attack, a direct result?
Well, I call it an exclamation point. And, you know, we have these exclamation points in life that really make a point to either to kind of end something so you can begin something new. And that certainly was something for me as far as the mindfulness. I'd always been a mindful person teaching holistic approaches to living well, but I revisited something that I hadn't done for quite some time, and that was neurolinguistic programming, which is a form of communication and personal growth techniques that I use in the book to really incorporate not only that, but in the mindfulness realm. And so I went into meditation deeply and really connected much more strongly with my spirit side of my, or the spirit center of who I am. And that was really brought back to the surface because of this experience that I had. It had never gone away, but it certainly became much more important to me and incorporated into my daily lifestyle much more. Now it's mostly what I do. That the neurolinguistic training with the mindfulness is really a very potent way of handling different situations and certainly accomplishing things that I would like to do, and it's a way that I teach my clients as well.
Well, you are a master practitioner of NLP, and for those who don't really know what NLP is, can you explain that?
Yeah, and it's a way of improving communication. The neuro part refers to the neurology of how we process our experiences via our senses. And the linguistic refers to the language we use to communicate those experiences. So we apply meaning to the information we decipher via our senses to develop our own unique language. And that's the programming part. The programming is how we communicate that information to ourselves and others to achieve our goals. So the results are strategies for what we do and what we want to create and sometimes what we don't want to create. So I found that using that with the mindfulness approach, the meditation, positive visualization, those things blended together have allowed me to develop these different mindfulness practices as well as very practical solutions.
It's become sort of a meme to say I'm busy rather than I'm fine when you're asked how are you. I'm fine sounds so civilized, like a line from another time. And now it's just a frenetic existence. What really changed?
Yeah, I think a couple of things changed. You know, we used to be a much more private culture, and so I'm fine was always a polite way to greet another person. It wasn't particularly revealing. It just was a way of conveying a almost a deeper message without asking of, you know, I'm fine, you're fine, let's move on now. It was an entree and an exit to any conversation. Well, somewhere along the line, leisure became, as I call it, the new lazy. It was no longer something that people responded well or responded or could connect with when we would say, I'm fine. In our culture now where everything is so exposed and so much in our, you know, within our realm of existence every single day, that people identify with a much more busy schedule, a much more busy lifestyle. So when I say I'm busy, you get that. And most people, when they're connecting, to make that connection, there has to be a familiar ground. So this has become a very familiar ground. The reasons behind it, some of the really big parts of that has made this happen, is a lot of it has to do with economics. When economies grow and time becomes more scarce, it becomes more valuable. So we cherish it. We don't want to waste it. So being busy is a way of making sure that we are honoring that time and using it well, so to speak. And it also, the sense of being busy, it gives us the feeling that if I'm busy, I must be important because I have a lot to do. And if the people that we're sharing our life with are busy, then for us to be able to connect with them and be part of that group, whatever that group might be, we do the same. And then that's the way that we just continue to carry it on. So the status of being busy is the fact that everybody around me is busy, and I will be busy too. Technology has made it incredibly easy to be busy, even though the technology promised that it would make convenience for what we're doing every day, day in, day out. However, now we replaced it with other things. So it's a very layered kind of culture, or very layered process that's happened to develop this busy culture. And it's not just women. It's all of us. It just affects women in a different way, and most of that has to do with the economics of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the workplace has become no less stressful over these how many years. Where are we going there? People are really crying the blues, at least the ones I talk to, about they have to do more and more and more. How do you cope with that busyness in the workplace? That's very real.
It is very real. And what's happened, again, I'm going to go back to technology, because I always say technology has no boundaries. It carries over into everything we do. Many of us wake up in the morning, instead of greeting our partner or the day, so to speak, we grab for our phone and we check our social media feed or our emails. So it's really plowed right into our lives without any boundaries. So it makes it easy to carry the office home with us. It makes it easy to say, yes, I can get to that on Saturday, because it is easy. It's available. But what we forgot to do was, when we got all this great new technology coming into our culture, we forgot to set the boundaries. And I often say it's like giving the car keys to a 10-year-old. They might be able to get down the driveway and down the street, but they're not going to be able to drive across town without some kind of incident, because they're not ready to use the equipment. They don't know the proper use of it at this point. And that's kind of where we are with technology. We know how to use it, but we're not really ready to use it in the way that it's coming at us, because it's coming so fast and it's crossing all boundaries and it's blurred the lines between personal time and professional time. And now we are just making it all, you know, we've kind of put it in all one basket, so to speak. And for some reason, it's now okay for us, or even expected of us, to bring the office home, to have it within our personal lives. So this falls back to, again, being mindful and aware and conscientious about what it is you're doing when you're doing it. Because just because we're doing something doesn't mean we're doing it well. Doesn't mean that we're doing it in a quality way, and it doesn't mean it's going to benefit us. So it's really about pulling back and creating some boundaries for what it is that we have in front of us. And again, that's how that busyness gets really set up, not only in the workplace, but in the home as well.
In the book, you refer to a phrase that you coined, the overscheduled woman, the OSW. What are some of the big red flags that tell you you might be one?
Yeah, well, the overscheduled woman is that get it done attitude, and she frequently opts out of doing something for herself when someone else close to her requests her time. She often puts herself last and has this kind of variegated sense of doing too much and not enough. And the things that she once enjoyed now become just something else that she has to do. And that's a big one right there, that the things that I once liked to do now are a burden. And these are just a couple of the examples or signs, because I have 10 of them in the book. But it's that imbalance between obligation and expectation and the lack of personal replenishment, which is a little bit what we were talking about before. You can't get a lot. You can't get personal replenishment if the boundaries are blurred between personal time and professional time, or any other time for that matter. And it leaves many women feeling as though they just can't catch up with their lives. And that's, in a nutshell, what the OSW is, the overscheduled woman is. And there's some concrete reasons behind this, but what women and men share is this technology piece, because on average we're spending about 5 hours a day on our phones. So that is a huge distraction, and it's also another piece of us feeling like we're so busy, because in fact we are busy. We're not productive as much as we are busy, and that's the difference.
Our guest on this Chief for Yourself is Yvonne Talley, author of Breaking Up with Busy: Real Life Solutions for Overscheduled Women. An article in the Huffington Post called busy a sickness. Is that too harsh?
No, you know, I wouldn't say I read that, and I would not say it's too harsh. I would say, because what it can lead to, you know, sickness is you have a lot of symptoms. So it's a kind of a loose way of saying we're headed in that direction. So I wouldn't say that it's too harsh, because I think that there are so many health considerations that we're seeing now coming up because of being so busy. Lack of sleep, what happens when we experience insomnia and lack of sleep and stress. We can't have that cellular restoration. We can't have our body as well as we'd like it. Our immune system is affected by it, our blood pressure, everything. So, you know, those would be symptoms of just not taking care of ourselves, and that can be a big part of being busy. So sickness, you know, yeah, I guess it is kind of in a way. I guess that's more of a word than anything. It's not a diagnosis, but it can be, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, too, and I'm just throwing this out to kick this around, could low self-esteem play a part in this?
Yeah, I think part of it is, you know, it's kind of a combination. It's very layered, this idea that I'm not enough, that I am not enough just being who I am, and who am I anyway, and what does it mean to just be? So this is really an exploration of self, I would say. And because we have what I call the comparison game now in our culture, so prevalent, and a lot of this, again, has to do with technology. We can see, you know, what other people are doing continuously through social media, and we know it's not real. We know that there's filters on everything, but still the addictive quality of technology has allowed it to really, come into our lives on such a grand scale. So it's that comparison game now that we're playing, and that will often lower someone's self-esteem if they don't have a good sense of self to begin with, and they start to compare themselves with others. That can just amplify any feelings that they have of self-esteem. And also, this, as I said, this feeling of not being enough, because there seems to be this pressure on everybody now that we have to keep up. So disengaging from these comparisons that we get fed to us through technology is one step that we can start to make. Cutting back on that is one step that we can start to make about finding more about who we are rather than what we're doing all the time.
I was on a flight back home from back east, actually. When I was sitting not far from the flight attendant, she took her place in that little jump seat and seemed to be in a meditative state. Now, I know you worked as a flight attendant, and you used your experience in that seat to come up with a practice that you outline in the book. Talk about what you learned while you were buckled in.
Yeah, I'm so glad that she was doing that. I'm happy to hear that, because so often now, I always watch the flight attendants. As a former flight attendant, I always watch them. And I'm always struck by the fact if they're on their phone or they're chatting, because what you're referring to is the 30-second review. And that was something that I was taught from day one in training, that we always did the minute we sat down on the jump seat. We brought to our conscious thinking what would happen in a case of emergency, and we went through every scenario. How would I undo my seatbelt? How would I open the door? How would I get the passengers out? How would I check for additional passengers? Every scenario that could possibly happen, and that was called the 30-second review. And we did it on takeoff, and we did it on landing, because we know that when you bring things through your conscious mind, up to your conscious mind, that you're going to be more likely to react with that, rather than having it sitting down there and, oh yeah, I remember how to do that. So you want to bring it up to your conscious mind. And that is much of what I use in the book, in a lot of the exercises, is bringing the conscious mind to what it is that you want to create. What do I want? Not what do I want to avoid, what do I fear, what do I want? And that's a form of meditation. As you said, she was in that meditative state. That is a form of guided, self-guided meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very efficient, very resourceful, and easy to do. I often, when I talk about doing meditation, I teach meditation, I often talk about the fact it's, would I like you to do it 40 minutes a day every day? Absolutely, but that's not what this is about. It's about developing a practice. It's about developing that mind muscle for clear concentration and being in that moment. And that's what that 30-second review is. That's what meditation is. That's what mindful thinking is.
Well, speaking of the energies, meditative and otherwise, things like spirituality, universal energy, possibly even religion, you mentioned as possibly helping with the breaking up of busy or breaking up with busy. Can you talk a little more about that?
Yeah, I think for everyone it's going to be different. For me, certainly reconnecting, is a time in my life where I was really able to reconnect with my spirituality, and that's personal to everyone. But I do think that when I connect with my inner voice and my intuition, it's a powerful tool for gaining clarity and igniting my own inspiration. Additionally, relieving tension, because I'm mindfully attuning to the positive aspects of what to any situation or what I desire. So for me, having the spirituality, religion, or universal energy, however you might want to look at it, belief and faith in something beyond yourself can open your mind and your heart to living life with more kindness, more love, compassion, empathy, all of those qualities that we want for ourselves. When we are mindful and we really are in that place of presence, we choose what it is that we want to bring into our life, those are the things that most of us choose. Most of us choose happiness, kindness, love. And so we can do that when we're in that space, whether we call it spirituality, religion, universal energy, meditation, whatever it might be. But again, it's being conscious of your thoughts so that you can direct them towards your desires.
Mm-hmm. Now, you work, of course, as you mentioned, with clients, individual and otherwise. You lead meditative and de-stressing for corporations, too. How are bigger companies receiving these ideas? They tend to be rigid, or they have been in the past. Are they accepting of this?
Yeah, John, I would agree with that. It's a slow boil, but they are slowly coming, bringing in wellness programs. That's the kind of the first entree into getting companies to bring in some type of meditation in a wellness format. And some businesses are now bringing it in for what they call the upper management or executive staff, which I find very valuable in uniting particular goals within the company. So as long as it's what I have found is it from a standpoint of being a practice and a tool to harness energy in a direction that is collaborative, that's what they're looking for in companies. When I work with individuals and groups, that's quite often where I can bring in the more spiritual universal energy aspect of it. So those are definitely different in the message, but I just want people to have the opportunity to not only listen to their inner voice, but to calm the mind chatter so they can have a clearer mind and be more compassionate and empathetic towards one another while they're at the workplace and in their home and in the world, in the larger world to be.
One last question, and I guess it's kind of obvious, or at least I think it'll be of some help to someone who's up to her eyes in busyness and just doesn't know what to do. Leave us with a step one.
Step one is to take a nice deep breath. And the step one would be, we spend about 20 minutes a day looking for our car keys. So we all have time to sit down and clear our mind. And I call it the 3-minute meditation. Just focus on your breath. Just focus on your breath for 2 to 3 minutes every day. And then start with a mantra. Today I ask for, or today I will bring in more calm or more happiness, whatever it might be. And when you start your day with a 3-minute clearing of the mind or a meditation, and you develop a mantra for that day, then when the day starts to spin, you can bring yourself back to one deep breath and that quick mantra that you've come up with. That's it. I mean, that's a step one. And make sure that it's a step one, that you're taking one step at a time. This isn't about a big leap of change. This is about one step at a time to move in the direction that you desire.
Hmm. Where would we find your website?
YvonneTalley.com.
The book is Breaking Up With Busy, Real Life Solutions for Overscheduled Women by Yvonne Talley. Yvonne, thanks for being on with us today and for sorting out the madness of busyness. The book is very helpful, and I know lots of folks are going to enjoy it. So I'm going to ask you to come back and talk with us again, okay?
I'd love to, John. Thank you so much.
We will link to Yvonne Talley's website at chiefforyourself.com. Put your email address into the box at the top of the page, why don't you? And you'll be kept up to date on show and guest information. And you'll know who's going to be on and when we do these interviews first run. And if there are any changes to the guest schedule or dates or times or what have you, that does happen sometimes. That is going to do it for today's Chief of Yourself. Thanks so much for being with us. Be well, and I'll talk to you soon.